2017, three men joined together in a pact to see what they could collectively do to advance civilization, further the cause of world peace, and elevate mankind. These three men were internationally renowned musician and Linkin Park multi-instrumentalist Dave Phoenix Ferrell, multiple PGA Tour champion and world-class golfer Brendan Steele, and Mark. They named themselves the Members. Those who they chose to sit with and ponder the mysteries of the universe, they named the Guests. What you're about to listen to is one of those historic conversations. Welcome to the Member Guest Podcast. Welcome to Member Guest.
What's up, world? Welcome to Member Guest. Today, the same as all of season one, we're here at Southern California operation of the best craft brewery, The Brewery. We bring the silky, smooth, sultry voices. They give us a space with some recording equipment and an abundance of excellent beers. With me, as always, is Mark and Brendan. Mark and Brendan, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing great. I just had an IV today, so I'm chock full of vitamins. I'm ready to go. I'm feeling awesome. I'm going to try to level myself back out a little bit with some beer, and I think we're going to have a good day.
I've got a Black Tuesday port IV right now going, so I'm hydrating as well.
And today's guest is an absolute legend. He's got over 85 million records sold worldwide, 5 Grammy wins, a couple of Tonys, countless other awards. He, along with his band, was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2015. The man sitting behind the drums, keeping it all together for Green Day, a golf buddy, a great guy, and a great friend, Trey. I'm so stoked that you're here hanging out with us.
Hey, guys.
How are you?
Hello. I'm good. There's 3 different kinds of beer in front of me that I've been told to be careful of. And, you know, I'm just geeking out on the equipment here. You got, like, a red mixer over there, a gold mic here, a silver one here, an IV in his arm. Not bad.
Overall, then, are you saying that you're impressed with the setup?
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
So, Brandon, yeah. This IV, did they put any GABA in it? Because I did that one time, and I was like, just give me the stuff that's going to make me feel stoned.
And that's the GABA?
They put GABA in it. I went home. I was like, oh, man, I feel so good on my couch. Rules.
They definitely didn't give me that because I don't feel that good. But
you look kind of geed up.
Yeah, I'm just a little excited.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, you're here. We got a few beers going. Yeah. Had an IV to get all jacked up. Finished it off with a coffee, too, after the IV. So that's probably a good combo. Just get all ramped up.
Yeah, vitamin B IV and a coffee enema.
Yeah, perfect.
Sounds like the perfect Thursday.
Thirsty Thursday.
I've heard the term GABA now twice ever, and it's been last night and today. Well, and my joke last night was a Yo Gabba Gabba reference, which admittedly was not strong, so I won't repeat it. It probably was just to say Yo Gabba Gabba after someone said GABA, trying to make myself like, yeah, I know what that is. Like, I'm in with that. I'm smart.
I got kids.
Yo Gabba Gabba, right? And they're like, no, that's you idiot.
The first thing I think of when I hear GABA and then GABA and then there's a hey. Ramones.
Yeah. You know. Oh, so okay. So that's a different Gabba Gabba.
Yeah. Gabba Gabba, we accept you. We accept you. One of us.
So what is the Gabba?
It's chemical from your brain. Makes you feel good.
And you can get it in an IV.
Totally. You can get it. And you can get this other stuff. I'll tell you in a second what it's called.
I just didn't see that on the package today. I would have definitely gone for it.
Trey, while you're looking for that, how did you meet these two clowns here?
That's kind of funny. Good story. You know, we're in Paris, France, not Texas. You know, I see this beefcake hunk of a man come out of the steam room with this, like, Phoenix tattoo, blazing, just specimen of a man with, like, steam coming out. And he's like, hey, man, what's up? Nice dick. And I looked, are you talking to me? He's like, oh, no, he was talking to this other guy, obviously.
I thought what you were going to say was that I was talking to the mirror.
Yeah. I think I might have had shorts on, but you were definitely naked. And, you know, you had just the tiniest of towels on. And then we started, you know, chatting it up. And I was like, I think that's the dude from Linkin Park. And you're like, yeah, so your tour's going. And then I was like, oh, yeah, it's totally different. Because, like, when you're in a band like Linkin Park or Green Day or something, there's like certain things that you enjoy and are allowed, like hubbing, for instance, which other bands don't get to do. And it's like it was pretty clear that you were hubbing. And then we were talking about how long the tour is going to be, and I was like, oh, the tour is going to be over, yada yada, and after, like, my wife and I are going to go to Greece, and we're going to get a boat, and we're going to cruise around, and he's like, no way, my wife and I are going to get a boat and go to Greece and cruise around, like, and the dates totally meshed up, and we were going to Greece to get boats and cruise around at the exact same time. So that's pretty cool.
I had the good fortune to have seen Mike Amato, who we've both worked with in the past at different points. Mike's an awesome tour manager. We worked with him probably for 5 years or so. Now tour managing for you guys. I'd seen him the night before and bumped into Mike as well. So I had the advantage of already knowing that you guys were staying at the same hotel we were. At least that was in the back of my mind. I'm coming out of the little spa area in the steam room of the hotel, and
Dave
had
been waiting in the steam room for hours. for you to
he looked a little wrinkly and shriveled.
Just
your fingers,
you got the chance.
At least. Yeah,
I had tipped off some hotel staff, and they told me Trey's regular operations. Yeah, so I come out. It's literally just me and you. I'm like, oh, that's Trey. And I'm thinking back. No, I haven't met Trey. So I'm sitting there changing whatever my towel, and I figure like, yeah, we've got some people in common. And admittedly, I don't know if you're the same way, but I'm always a little bit standoffish, especially with musicians. Like, I don't know why, but I don't get along well with musicians, which is a weird thing to say.
Yeah, but I'm a drummer, so it's safe.
Yeah, drummers is more safe than other things. Yeah, I remember seeing you, and it's kind of like, I should say hi and just at least say, you know, we've got these people in common, whatever else. And as we started talking, I think the amount of connections and similarities that we had, like, oh, you kind of live in Southern California sometimes too. Like, where are you at? And then it was, oh, you play golf here and there. Like, so do I. Like, oh, you know these people. And then it was like, what are you doing at the end of the tour when you guys are done? You're going to Greece too and doing a boat trip. Like, so am I.
Dude, do you like hand jobs? No way.
Did we just become best friends?
I know.
That's what I went.
Do you
back.
Want to do karate in the garage?
When I went back and I think I was talking to Shinoda later that day, I was like, yeah, I bumped into Trey and he's awesome. Like, I think we just became best friends. So good times in Paris. But now we get to tell anybody at least that we got to meet in a Parisian spa, Parisian steam room.
I think it's really a special friendship too, where you actually meet and you're already naked.
Well, the second time I met Dave, he had a shirt off too. He comes paddleboarding over to our boat from his boat, and him and Lindsay come over, and they're like, hey, what's up? Like, hey, you guys wanted to drink some wine? We ended up polishing off like a bottle of Greek white, and then you guys are like, oh, we got to go back to our boat because, you know, we have children. And then, like, so we both get in our dinghies, and we're, like, water skiing, and then we see these guys are wakeboarding. We're like, these guys are rad. This is cool. So, yeah, Sarah and I were water skiing. Well, she was wakeboarding. I'm terrible at that, so.
As I remember, you guys were actually trying to get your boat to work for a lot of that.
That was the case. And for the rest of that trip, that dinghy was just horseshit. And our captain and his first mate, they were like father and son, and they were just yelling at each other in Greek the whole time. And it was great.
I loved being in Greece, and I never gotten the chance to spend that much time there. I actually studied ancient Greek, which doesn't help at all and is entirely irrelevant.
That was like your
to the
major,
story.
Right?
Minor. Good memory, though.
Yeah.
One thing I thought that was really funny about that was our Soteropolis, maybe? Soteropolis? Sotos, for short, was our captain. And no matter what, when he was speaking with somebody in Greek loudly, it always sounded like he was freaking out. Mm-hmm. So every time we were pulling up to moor the boat or whatever else, whether he's talking to the other crew people or talking to people on shore, it was just like, I was sitting there thinking, like, are we going to get in a Greek fight? Is that what's happening right now? Is this... It's going to go suddenly super south really quickly. And then it was always like, I'd be like, hey, Sotos, what are you guys talking about? He's like, oh, you know, just telling him like, oh, you know, we needed more of this line here and blah, blah, blah.
Weather's really nice today to be on a boat.
Yeah.
As we talk about this particular story, our friendship starts in Paris. Then it goes to the Greek waters.
It's kind of elitist, isn't it?
It's a little ridiculous.
We sound like dicks.
Now you're in Placentia and Dave has his shirt on. And it's,
I know. It's like, okay, yeah, Bruins.
Dave has more clothes on every time you see him.
I was going to say, should I take my shirt off to make this seem more?
It's like the opposite of strip poker. But what are you saying, Dave?
What I was going to say, thank you, Trey. Do you get to a place where you reflect on how different in a lot of ways what we get to do is, and do you still see it as fun and cool and unique? Do you take a step back and reflect on those things?
Oh, every day. You know, like you said, you have an aversion to musicians. Most of my friends aren't in bands, except for the guys in my own band, right. You know?
Yeah.
Like we're all like great friends, but I know that none of my friends or family or anybody wants to hear me bitch about stuff from tour, which is like, okay, well, but you get to travel, you know? So it's like, you kind of keep that stuff off the conversation block a lot of times. But that's why it's cool meeting a guy in a band like you. Like, we're on the same record label. We've always been sort of distant cousins that never get to go to grandma's house on the same day, you know? So it was really cool meeting you. And when you see it from the inside looking out, it seems like, oh, God, we're so lucky to do this. But then I think there's expectations that people have of guys in bands, like, oh, you guys, you know, just go out there and just have so much fun. But of course, we know it's a lot of work and a lot of, you know, the most fun you have is when you're on stage and when you're writing records and recording and stuff, and actually in your creative element or your performance element, you know, those are the two sides where it's really fun. But we're super lucky because we can put cool shit on the in-between time. Like, that Greece trip was amazing. It was total bucket list. I've always wanted to do that. And now, you know, I've met my wife, Sarah, and I finally have the girl that I want to take to Greece on a yacht, you know? And so it's like, okay, let's do this. You know, this is cool. We're on an amazing tour. We're in Europe already. Let's just go to Greece and get a yacht and spend a week. Let's do it. And hang out with Dave.
That could either be additive or subtractive, at least at the early stage.
Well, I know Lindsay didn't have any sardines until that night.
Right.
That's like her first sardine venture, and she was like, these are good. So that was cool.
The other funny thing, too.
You know what? I'm trying to incorporate our chicks into this conversation because we're both madly in love. I know this guy, and it's another cool thing I could see about you and Lindsay when you came on the boat. You guys are made for each other. You're madly in love.
For sure.
And like, that's the kind of people I want to surround myself with. You know, people who are like me, that they are with the person they're supposed to be with.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, I can see that.
And
right
likewise,
away.
Yeah, with you, with Sarah. I mean, these guys haven't been fortunate enough to meet your better half, but it's very awesome to see that as well. You know, with you guys, and that's I think that's a rarity in what we do, but also maybe even just like a rarity beyond that. You know, mm-hmm. And it's really great to see. And as I made the joke, like, that we could either sour that Greek trip or make it better, like the addition of the ferals into that. For you guys, as we were, I think we boarded our boats or whatever, a day different. As we're sailing into our first area that we're going to be, we put our captains of the boats in touch with each other. Lindsay immediately picked up on the fact, and so did our captain, that we weren't going to be mooring next to the boat, but actually just like, yeah, let's have a little bit of space just in case this doesn't go perfectly.
That was my call.
Yeah. And we,
that was my call.
100%. But to her credit, she picked up on that immediately. She's like, oh, that's great. Like, that's exactly how I want it. I don't want it. Like, what if
we don't know these people?
What if we're not best friends? You know, like that whole thing.
What if I don't like Dave with clothes on?
Right. Well, like, luckily that wasn't a thing.
I had an entirely different experience in Greece. I was there maybe 17 years ago with a girlfriend. We island hop with a ferry, which is different than a yacht if you don't if you don't know your boats. She broke up with me on the island of Santorini.
Yes.
But we still had like 3 days left of the trip. Then the people of Greece decided to get together and boycott the ferry, so the ferry shut down. We got stuck on an island.
That happens.
Yeah, I mean,
I love that about Europeans, man. They're like, fuck this, injustice, suck it, I ain't going to work. Yeah. Fuck you. Like, no, deal with it. They see what happens. And then you never know. Like, they get their way, usually, like 9 times out of 10.
It's definitely one thing that you start to appreciate as you start traveling, is that in different areas, like, different people will represent what they think or represent their own voice in different ways. Like, I've been in France many times when different things will just be shut down. Mm-hmm. And the people will just operate around that because they're used to it. But you know, living in the U.S. or in Southern California, if it was like the freeways closed today because Caltrans is on strike or something, they've just blocked it off. It would just implode here.
There's like an ongoing protest in Frankfurt. There's, every time you go to Frankfurt Airport, and there's one terminal, and there's always people in there like making noise and protesting. What is that? They don't like the airport. It's going to come to a new place or something. And like, and I never know what they're, but they're, it's like an ongoing. It's been years. They're still pissed. So, I think Germany's like, eh.
Is that your opinion of Germany, or is that what Germany?
No, I was born in Germany.
That's right.
Kind of. I was born in a U.S. Army base in Germany.
What part of Germany?
Frankfurt.
Frankfurt.
Yeah.
And then from there, were you Bay Area?
No. And then my parents moved to Vista down San Diego County, where my mother was from. And then my dad said, you know, fuck this. We're going to grow pot in the wilderness. And then we all moved up to Spy Rock Mountain, which is north of Laytonville, California, about 30-minute drive up the highway, and then like 30 minutes up dirt road. So then we lived there from like second grade till I was like 14, and then moved to Willits, which I thought was a big city, which is also not a big city.
In all this too, Trey Cool began at some point.
Yeah, Spy Rock.
Spy Rock is where Trey Cool began?
Yeah. That wasn't my doing.
Where I'm coming from on this is I too have the nickname as far as band circles go. It's Phoenix. It came actually from this guy over here.
No way.
Yeah. Well,
I was there, but I don't, you gave it that nickname to yourself.
I may have gave it.
That's, and he actually demanded for a week that we all called him that until it just stuck. Yeah. This was pre-Lincoln Park, so.
You have to call me Dragon, and you have to call me Nighthawk.
We all had purposely bad nicknames, and Phoenix came from Mystery Man, the Ben Stiller movie. He's basically,
if you haven't seen that movie,
he's trying to.
It's great.
It's amazing.
He's trying to impress a girl, and the scene is like, she's like, "All right, what's your real name?" He's like, "Oh, you mean my secret identity?" She's like, kind of like, "No, like, what's your real name?" And he's, "My name is Phoenix. Phoenix, dark.
His real
dark
name
Steel.
Is his real name is Roy."
And then he's so like, "Fine, my name is Roy," because she's obviously not buying it. We played in a band starting in high school. We used to watch this movie all the time in like the van because we all had purposely bad nicknames, bored on the road. I said Phoenix. I will not reply to anything other than Phoenix. Mark was Mr. Bingo. Another guy was Cheese. When I came back to Lincoln Park, I considered changing my name to Mr. Powerful because that was from... Brendan, you don't even know this.
So good.
Think. It's either Powerful or Mr. Powerful. I like Mr. Powerful better. But that came from a 6 Feet Under episode. And obviously, that was like this gangster guy who was super like G'd up and tough, and his name was Powerful. So I actually toyed with the idea as Hybrid Theory was coming out and everything else to only go as Powerful or Mr. Powerful at that point and change my nickname, but I didn't because Phoenix had been kind of funny, and then somehow it became like its own monster. Like it did what it was never intended to do and grew into this whole separate thing. Trey Cool, there's got to be a good story behind that as well.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Dave. Because when I call you
thank you, Frank.
When I call you Dave, people are like, who? You know, Dave Farrell, they're like, who? You know, Phoenix. Oh, okay. Yeah. Like Mike Amato, Tom Robb.
Yeah.
These guys, they know you as Phoenix, you know?
And even like big fans do that on social media and stuff too. Like we'll post something together and they'll be like, I don't know what these guys are talking about. There is no Dave in Linkin Park.
Right.
And then they'll, like, other people below will be like, it's Phoenix, you idiot. Phoenix is Dave. Like,
rock stars and strippers have a lot in common. Like they do. Like we all have our pseudo names, you know, like
Sting.
Brandy. Tanqueray.
Wait, Brandy the singer or Brandy the...
I'm not calling Brandy the singer a stripper.
I was not saying that you were.
Go there. Phoenix. So, Trey Cool. Yeah, so my name is Frank, really, like my dad and my grandfather and my son. But I'm like the third one. So they just, like back in 1972 when I was born, they're like, oh, that'd be cool. We'll call him Trey. You know, I think it was probably a thing, like calling your daughter Harper now or something, you know? Yeah, you guys know some Harpers out there, don't you? Yes, you do. So, like 12 years old, and I'm in this band called The Lookouts, and our singer's 38. And our bass player is 16. And, you know, I'm 12. And we're like driving the Subaru to like probably our first gig all together. And he's like, you need a punk rock name. This is Lawrence Livermore. Well, that's his punk name. His real name is Larry Hayes. But Lawrence Livermore, after the Lawrence Livermore Labs, he's like, you need a punk name. We got Kane Kong on bass.
Kane Kong?
Kane Kong. He was Kane Honchke. But Honchke's doesn't really roll off the tongue.
Sure.
So Kane Kong. And he's like, what about Trey Cool? Yeah, that's it, Trey Cool. And I remember we were listening to NWA Straight Outta Compton, driving down a dirt road in a Subaru, a yellow Subaru full of equipment, and I'm like stuffed in the back with the drums, and Kane is like happily like, oh yeah, that's cool. And I was like, I don't like it. Nah, I don't like it. And they're like, no, you're Trey Cool from here on out. You're Trey Cool. And I'm like, I'm not that at all. That's stupid. That's a terrible name.
Basically, you're 12, so you're doing whatever we tell you to do.
That's right. So we play the gig, whatever, and then we make a record. Lawrence Livermore is putting the record out. So what's the name of the drummer? Trey Cool. And I was stuck. So it's not that bad, but it's kind of an asshole name.
that's what I go
to. Hi, I'm Trey Cool. Like, really? Fuck you. So I've like kind of had this asshole name my whole life. So I kind of have to tread lightly with it. Ooh, can we call people?
You want to call someone?
Can we call people and put them on the air?
Yeah.
Do you know? Do you have the technology?
We do not. You could hold up a speakerphone to the microphone.
Okay.
Who do you want to call?
I don't know. I just think that'd be fun. We all have famous people on our phones. Everybody call a famous person and
at the same time.
It'd go one at a time, and then like you know.
That could be a nice new feature for us.
I think that's a cool thing. I was actually thinking about that yesterday. Like we should do a thing on your show where we okay, who do you got on your phone? Who's the most famous person you have on your phone? Let's call them.
Should we do it right now?
Yeah, we can do speakerphone. That'll work.
Call Shinoda. Or, who? Wait. Yeah, no, dude, I got more famous than that. I got Dave Farrell right here. Okay. Hello?
Do you see what I just did there?
Yeah. We're famous. And that was the Hall of Famous Guy segment.
The best ever. Like the only famous guys we have in each other's phones is each other.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. I was going to ask you though, I mean, we were chatting a little bit about golf. I know you've got an awesome beginning story. It's more common than people might expect for musicians to play golf. And I think it makes a ton of sense, especially on tour. We've got our days free. A lot of times we're just looking for something to figure out to do, you know, and nights are obviously playing shows. So it's an easy fit, I think, for musicians to pick up the game. It's not like super common. You might find a guy per band or a guy on a tour or whatever that's interested in the game or likes to play. But for you, what was your beginnings into that?
Well, I was like 25 and, you know, already like Dookie, Insomniac, and like probably in the Nimrod era. I was like, you know what? I want to learn to play golf, but I don't want to really try. So I just like got a shitty set of golf clubs, like secondhand. And I went to the driving range and we drank beers and hit it up at the Montclair driving range in Oakland Hills, California, not Michigan. And so we were hitting those balls and drinking them beers and it was cool. And then, hey, they have like a 9-hole course. Let's play that. And I was god awful, like hitting cars and stuff. And then I moved on to the San Leandro 9-hole track and trying there, and it was just terrible. But then I hit one good shot. I was like, oh, man, that felt good, you know? And that's how everyone has the same story. You hit one good one, and you're hooked. So I think I hit, like, out of a sand bunker, and it, like, went in the hole or something. I don't remember exactly what it was. It was just so good. It's like you couldn't, like not feel the stoke.
Right.
It's like catching your first wave, you know? I felt the stoke and I was like, oh shit, I wanna like get into it. So I started playing like 18 hole courses, like the munis and stuff around Oakland. You know, it was pretty cool, but no one ever taught me how to hold a golf club, how to swing a golf club. Like I had no idea. And I was just like, yeah, just whack it, go that way. And that was what I said, go that way. So, bah. And I would try it until it went a little bit straight and do that. Eventually I was like, you know what? I want to get good. So I called our manager and I said, hey man, do you know like any golf teachers? You're like a scratch golfer. So like, do you know any golf teachers up here? And he's like, well, not up there, but there's this guy, Butch Harmon, that, you know, is pretty good. And I had no idea who he was, you know? I was like, oh, okay, let's try him out. He's like, well, yeah, but it's like a waiting list to get in and all that. I was like, really? Well, somebody else then, you know? So he calls me back like 30 minutes later. He's like, what are you doing this weekend? There's an opening. There's a cancellation at the Butch Harmon School of Golf. You can go there. I'm like, I'm going to the Butch Harmon School of Golf. So I had to stay at the Rio Hotel, which is a shithole, by the way. And I got robbed, but that's another story. So day one, I get there and I'm like, pew, 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 left and right. And just like throwing balls all over the place. Reggie Jackson was standing to my left and hitting him like 400 yards.
Does Reggie also have to stay at the Rio?
I doubt it. No, okay. Because he was a, you know, proper student.
Okay.
But I think if you go as like a first-time student, you have to stay at the Rio. And then once you've gone through the school,
them's the
you
rules.
Can just do whatever. Yeah.
Right.
So Reggie was hitting them like 400, and then they like curl to the left super hard or curl to the right. And this guy, Matt, who is one of the pros there, Matt Kilgariff, he goes, Reggie, in this sport, you want to keep it in the ballpark. And I thought it was pretty cool. And so I was the worst student he's ever had, he told me several times. He had to show me how to grip a club. He had to show me like how to like, to keep my left arm straight. I didn't know. I was like bending it around like a noodle. So basically, I learned to swing a club from Butch Harmon, but doesn't make me a great golfer because I'm like 18.334979er pi handicap.
Super exact handicap.
Super exact. We talked about this earlier. My exact handicap. That's what happens when you don't turn in cards.
It gets down to the fractions.
Yeah. But another side note, I knew that like I did a little research on her before I went there that he had taught Tiger Woods, which it's like, dude, Tiger Woods, awesome. Especially back then. He was winning everything that he looked at, you know. I got a shitty golf bag from a garage sale and I put all my stuff in it and I brought it and I knew this is gonna bug him. So he went back to his little storage area and he got me a Titleist golf bag from the first time that Tiger got endorsed when he was like 18 years old and he won the Vegas Open. So I've got this white Titleist leather golf bag that was part of like, I guess they sent him a bunch. So I got one of like Tiger's first Titleist endorsed golf bags because I brought a busted ass.
So it really paid off to bring the worst possible thing that you could.
Yep. 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 And so now I can go back there if I want. I haven't in a very long time and work with his pros or talk to him. But Butch Harmon, magical dude. He's super rad. He stands behind you and you hit your best golf shot. It's freaking Santa Claus. It's weird, man. Never seen anything like it. He walks away, shank.
He definitely has special voodoo. He's worked with a ton of great players. And I think one of the things with him is that you see a lot of other famous pros even that have messed up a lot of tour players. Like Butch, I mean, I'm sure somebody would probably find the argument, oh, he screwed this guy up or that guy up. But for me, like, I don't think he's ever ruined a guy's career. So that shows me that he's a really good teacher. Because some guys get so caught up in their own path and their own teaching, they don't understand when a pro's playing poorly that they need to adjust their path and adjust how they're actually teaching them because they're just not getting it. Because they go, the teachers will say, well, I'm telling you all the right stuff and you're just not getting it. Well, that's when a good teacher says, okay, I'm telling you the right stuff, but I got to find a different way to tell you and a different way to get you to this end game. So I think he's a really good guy at doing that. And that's probably why you feel that voodoo when he comes around and stands behind you and yeah. you start striping it. But you just need him to follow you around everywhere you go.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Nobody can afford that, not even the pros. Well, some of them, if it's like the Masters, I guess.
I just won with my coach on the bag.
That's right. Wow. That's right.
So maybe there's something to it.
Shout out to Mason.
Shout out to Chris Mason. Yeah.
Powerful Mason, Mr. Mason.
Mr. Powerful.
Sir Mason.
Speaking of being on the bag, you know Mark Chaney.
I do. Very well.
Chingy.
Chingy.
Yeah.
Yeah. We go back to the days way before I was on tour. Met through a friend, mutual friend, Joe Scovrin, who now caddies for Ricky Fowler, actually.
Wow.
Joe actually ditched me for Ricky Fowler back when I was playing on the Nationwide Tour, which I would say was probably a good decision. But in any event, he was good friends with Mark. And so back when he was playing, we were both playing mini tours, traveling around the country. And so we would meet up with Mark whenever he was in a similar area, and we'd go out drinking and dancing and having this great time. And he's just super fun dude.
He's that kind of like a rock and roll caddy in a sense. Well, he likes to think he is, at least. Sluman, right?
Yeah.
And now he's with Freddie.
Yeah. Bo Van Pelt in there. They had some really good years.
Yep.
Yeah. And he's so funny because he'll like pop up. Now he's with Freddie, so they're playing on the Champions Tour mostly. But he'll pop up at an event like filling in for somebody, and he just doesn't give a shit. I mean, he's just like, oh, this guy is supposed to have a bad attitude. If he has a bad attitude with me, I'm leaving. Like, I don't need to put up with it.
I remember I was hanging out with him one time, and these girls came up there like, oh, hey, cool, you're in Green Day. Like, oh, are you his dad? And he's like, I'm not English, and I'm like 5 years older than him. It's like, yeah, but, you know, the tour will weather a guy. You're carrying a bag.
It's a lot of sun damage. A
lot of sun damage. No, he's cool, man.
A lot of verbal abuse. A lot of angry yeah. golfers.
I have never had a hole-in-one. Has anybody here had a hole-in-one? You've had it? No?
Do you not have one, Dave?
I have zero.
Dave has zero? I have six. Zero.
Six?
Only yeah. six?
Only six. I only have six.
It's like half or twice as many times as you've won on the PGA Tour.
That is. Indeed.
And that really helps the average for this room, B. Thank you.
It does, yeah.
We all have an average of one and a half.
One and a half. There was one that I actually got an unbelievable bounce. Like, I've hit some shots that I've hit have been really good and ended up going in the hole, but usually they're not your best shots that go in, and a lot of the time they're on some sort of a weird day where you're not really playing that well. I had one the final round of the first stage of Q School.
Year. That's the best story.
So it's the first year that I made it through to finals, and it was 2007. I was playing Canadian Tour. I had no status, and so Q School is just massive deal, and it's your whole career. And playing first stage, I was playing pretty well, and I felt comfortable, but we're in the final round, and I make the turn, and I'm like six inside the number, and I remember walking down the 10th hole and going, I might be 15 under for the week, but I could shoot 44 on this side pretty easy. You know, it's just like I haven't shot over probably 37 on a 9 holes for the 3.5 days. But I'm thinking to myself, yeah, that could happen. Come around, I think I make two pars, first two holes, get to number 12, and it's really firm. It's at TPC Scottsdale on the other course, not the one that we play the Phoenix Open on. It's downwind, front pin, really firm. I think it's like 155 yards, and I hit a wedge that's going to land short of the green. Like, you can't hold the green if you land it on. So I landed it short of the green, and it was a pretty good shot, but, I mean, who knows what's going to happen. So it's a wedge that lands, like, 15 yards short of the hole, takes, like, three bounces, starts rolling, and goes in. And then on the very next hole, I hit it to a foot. And then I only had, like, four holes left, and I was eight inside the number. And I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure you can make it now. You know? But that's how ridiculous.
Barring making like a 15 somewhere coming in.
That's how ridiculous Q School is that you get in your own head where you're like, I could shoot 43. Like, it's not impossible.
Yeah. I find that like hard to believe, but also at the same time, very easy to believe that you could be standing on the 18th hole of your final round of Q School and just basically be thinking, I could make a 10 on this hole and still get through. So let's just make sure I don't do worse than a 10.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like the old thing when you need like a birdie to make the cut. You know, you always end up with a birdie putt. Now, whether you make the putt or not is kind of a different story, but usually you play the hole pretty well. If you just need a par, you're probably going to end up with a par putt. You know, you kind of play to what you need, and which is always why it's good to go out and try to win the golf tournament rather than just make the cut or try not to put a limit on your score for the day. Not go out and go, well, a couple under is pretty good today, I guess. You know, I'm not really sure, but 200 would be nice. And then all of a sudden you're 200 through three and you're like, oh, just hang on for 15 holes. It's like, it just doesn't work that way. You have to think about it in a little different terms, but you kind of play to the level that you're expecting, so to speak, which is pretty interesting with all that goes into playing the game.
For sure. So
how much doubt creeps in at that point?
Oh, like, tons. And all the time.
How do you combat that? How do you have a short memory, or how do you stop yourself from fucking yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough. There's been plenty of times that I've screwed up. I mean, the more you play, the more you screw up. But I think the older I get, I have some good experiences to draw from. You always have a tendency to remember the bad experiences a little bit more than the good. But I have some good ones to draw from. And again, second Chris Mason reference, but Chris Mason's really helped me with my pre-shot routine and my post-shot routine. So the post-shot routine is not something that you hear about that often. Mm-hmm. But what he wants me to do is, if I hit a good shot, pat myself on the back and go, wow, that was awesome. What a great shot. And if I hit a bad shot, go, okay, no big deal. Here's what I did wrong. Here's what I'd like to do. You kind of make a little practice swing, or, you know, just visualize what you wanted. Okay, no problem. So you're either gaining confidence by hitting a good shot, or you're learning something when you hit a bad shot. Now, what has a tendency to happen is, for me, I expect to hit good shots. So when I hit a good shot, I go, yeah, good shot. But I don't give myself any credit for it, because it's just what you're expected to do. Then when I hit a bad shot, it's like,
Here we go.
You beat.
This is gonna suck.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you can ask my wife about 2012, which was a pretty ugly year on the golf course, off the golf course. Attitude was very poor. I was in the here we go stage at all times. So she had a ton of fun that year. But since then, I've tried to mature a little bit, tried to be a little bit better. Now, if you ask my caddy, he'd probably tell you that I have a meltdown every third or fourth hole. But it's just that kind of a game. You're always battling against yourself. And if I don't go out with the right intention and in the right state of mind, I'm not going to be able to adjust from the bad shots or recover from the bad shots as well as if I do a little mental prep before the round and I try to get myself in the right headspace, because you're always going to make mistakes. You're never going to go out and just go, oh man, that was perfect. Never had any stress. Easy. No problem. So you're still going to go, oh, I hit it 6 feet on this hole and I still missed it. And I'm mad about that. And you're mad about something every time you play golf. You're never like, oh, that was great. Couldn't do any better. And I never got upset and I did everything
but
I
wanted
to. If
you're getting mad, why play golf? That's the thing. It's like, you got to do it for enjoyment. And this leads me to my next question. Mr. Steele, is there a way to cheat at golf? Like, on the tour?
Sure. Absolutely.
Walk us through all the ways guys cheat on tour.
Yeah, I mean, there are probably an infinite number of ways to cheat on tour. Because a lot of the time, I mean, you see the groups on TV where they've got so many fans and every shot's being broadcast, but like, the rule of thumb is that you're kind of out there like on a Thursday morning and it's just the three of you and the three caddies and, you know, maybe a walking scorer and a couple fans or something, but there's not that many people around. I mean, you don't see it that often, but you hear stories about, oh, this guy did this, this guy did that. And it usually has to do with where they take a drop. So like, okay, he crossed the hazard way back here, but now he's dropping way up here, you know, like it didn't cover from the
I do
tee.
That
yeah
all day
most guys around the club do that. I mean nobody around the club plays,
but you're not
the
there
rules.
To have fun, you're there to compete and win millions of dollars.
Absolutely. I know other times there's been guys that are like, oh, we were in the woods and we were looking for this guy's ball and we couldn't find it, and then next thing you know he finds it and it's sitting perfect, and it's an area we've been searching the entire time, and somebody would have seen it.
See, that's kind of some rookie shit.
Is that Thursday stuff?
When I do that,
can be.
The secret is I place the ball, but then you got to make sure somebody else finds it.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's the only way to do that. If I'm gonna place the ball, I'm not gonna find it.
There's two dots on it on the outside.
I'm gonna immediately get out of that area and then let somebody else say like, "Oh, did you say you're playing a TaylorMade with a red dot?" Like, "Yep, that's mine." Did you find it? Like, "Yeah, it's over here."
But what happens when they go up? 5 minutes is up, and nobody's come over to your little spot where you've dropped your ball.
Wait, aren't they changing the rules to make it quicker?
They are changing the rules, not necessarily to make it quicker. They changed the hazard rule to, you know, there's yellow hazards and red hazards as of now. Yellow and red. So there's,
I just cheat.
Right. Nobody plays by the rules. Again, I said this in an interview earlier this year. Said nobody actually plays by the rules around the club when they're playing with their buddies. I mean, there's gimmies, there's free drops, there's mulligans, there's this, that, and the other thing, you know, whatever.
Breakfast balls.
Yeah, and I'm getting all these...
Breakfast ball.
I'm getting all these tweets from people like, "I don't know what club you're playing at. Everybody plays by the rules at our club." And I'm like, guys, relax.
Relax.
No, you don't. You're not playing by PGA Tour rules. No. But, I mean, I think cheating is rare on the tour, but guys can certainly, like, fluff up a lie or...
Okay, who's the biggest cheater on the tour? No, I'm serious. Is it Rory?
No.
No, he just angry. And he likes to
Which Rory fast. Are you talking about?
Sabatini.
Oh, Sabatini. No, Sabatini is actually a good friend of mine. He's actually a really good guy. He gets a little upset out on the course, but he's certainly not a cheater.
He likes to play fast.
He likes to play fast.
He runs hot.
He runs a little hot, yeah, for yeah, sure. But he's funny. Always taken really good care of me. He's a good dude.
And what about Ricky Fowler? Does he cheat?
His caddy cheats. He dropped me to go work for Ricky. That was the easy way out.
Yeah, but now he's got free Pumas.
Yeah, free Pumas for life.
Pumas.
Word.
Pumas.
Trey, you said an interesting thing to me the other day when we were hanging out, just that you'd been looking at some different YouTube videos as far as drumming chops and that kind of thing. And it made me start to think also in that moment, like, I know for me, in a weird way, a lot of the different things that I end up doing start to gravitate back towards music in some way or another, or whatever I put into golf, I then start to relate back to, like, how could I improve my songwriting? How could I improve my guitar playing? How could I improve bass?
Love whatever. Making.
I never go there. That's a good...
Oh, you should.
I probably
not,
should.
I don't know. You maybe should. You have a lot of kids.
Have you heard information that,
you have a
that
lot
I'm
of
not
children.
Privy to? But for you, is it similar? Like, how much do you relate back to playing drums and to kind of honing that craft? Whether it's what you learn on the golf course, what you learn on YouTube, like you're talking about, how much of it and eventually circles back into music?
It's kind of just being comfortable. If you're comfortable, you're not pushing yourself. You know, I like to work on stuff that I'm terrible at. So right now it's mambo. You know, I'm a terrible Latin drummer and I'm trying to work on that. And oh God, it's horrible. Like, I'm glad I'm alone in that room when I'm doing this, because I'm trying to get my left foot to do one thing and my right foot to do the other thing. And my right foot's got to be the and of two, and my left foot's got to do the clave, and then I've got to do the timbale part with my left hand, and then I've got to do a cowbell part on the right. It sounds terrible. But then eventually it sounds a little bit better. But if it's hard and it's difficult, then it's worth working on. If you just keep doing the same thing over and over, like they say practice makes perfect, but no, practice makes permanent. So if you practice the same thing over and over again, you're going to do it that way, period.
Right.
So, you know, push yourself on anything, golf, music, lovemaking.
Well, by your definition, then, I wouldn't have to work on lovemaking.
You got a lot of kids.
Yes.
If you had any advice for young golfers that want to be pros, that want to win 3, 4 times, 5 times on the PGA Tour.
3 so far, but hopefully more coming.
Yeah.
Way more.
What would you say? What's your advice to them?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that go into it, obviously. But, I mean, I think, number one, it has to be fun. Like, you aren't going to get there if you are pushed to do it. Or, you know, like, a lot of parents out there want their kid to be a PGA Tour player. And that gets to be tough. By the time a kid gets to college, he's found beer and girls and it's just like, this is way more fun. I don't really want to do this. I've been forced to do this my whole life. So it has to be something that the kid is interested in, that they're like, Dad, I love this. I want to be at the course all day. Dad, I love this. Let me go just putt, or let me go. I want to get a cup to put in my room so I can hit putts at night. You know, stuff like that, that normally, like, and it's got to be the same with music, right? Where it's just like, you just love it and you always want to have drumsticks in your hands, or you always want to have a bass in your hands, or I always want to sing.
Are you going
to
eat your fat? You're going to play golf and like it.
Is that your finish your plate reference?
Yeah.
clean off your plate.
You're going to eat your fat. So Dave, what do you think about for young budding bass players or
so what
musicians?
I always tell people, and maybe it's at this stage of my career, maybe it's a little bit cliche, but I started telling people it because I really thought that it was something that for me was really useful and handy. Was, as a developing musician, the worst thing I found that you could have would be a case for your instrument, because that creates a barrier from playing it.
You mean like you should have a gig bag?
I mean even before you're at that level, right? So obviously, like any student of an instrument, generally, whether it's a violin, which is where I started, or whether it's a guitar or a bass, or I'm thinking stringed instruments, so that's a little bit, I'm biased because that's my background. Mm-hmm. But so any stringed instrument players, their instrument, they're going to buy one, especially if, you know, your parent buys you one, or you save up and you buy one, then you tend to get a case because you want to protect the instrument.
Yeah.
Whereas for me, when I figured out that, like, a stand and just putting the instrument on a stand, it eliminated a barrier for me of playing the instrument, where it wasn't in a case and tucked away and put away, and it wasn't another step that I had to do to play it. Because starting on violin, I went through a period of my life where I would practice for an hour, 2 hours, whatever, per day in long stretches, starting when I was 6, 7, 8 years old. But when I started playing guitar, I didn't have that same type of time that I was putting into it. And it was more just like having the guitar out and playing it in 15-minute segments just throughout the day, like walking by it. Oh, I'm not doing anything right now. Pick that up, work on some chords, work on some little things. Great, I'm done, put it down, walk away, and not having the process of taking it in and out of a case, for me, made a huge difference. And I learned that a little bit later. And so I always encourage people, like, if you have a way that you can protect your instrument and that you can have it accessible to play, like, that's how you get better, is putting in the time every day, but doing it in a way that you can make work. You might not have a 2-hour segment to play the instrument. Play it for 10 minutes, and then play it for 10 minutes again an hour from now, and then play it for 20 minutes, and then play it, you know, like, figure out ways to integrate that into what you're doing, and it seemed to make it a lot easier.
Keep it in your hands.
Yeah. Keep it easy.
That's great.
Make it easy.
Yeah.
What about you? Drums is hard, right? Because you need a drum room. Like, you need parents who are very willing to be okay with you banging on drums.
Deaf parents are good.
Deaf parents.
Yeah.
Earplugs for your neighbors.
Just play with your friends. You know, like the guys you're with.
Yeah.
You know, don't play with somebody because you think he's like a hot ticket. He can rip on guitar. So even though he's an asshole, but he's so good. No, play with your friends, suck for a while, get better. And then when you're in a position like we are, then you're with your friends traveling the world and making dreams come true.
I think that's a great place for us to end our time together today.
Let's take our shirts off.
That's a great place for us to pretend we're in a Parisian spa, like we all started out together.
Oui, oui, monsieur.
Trey, it's been awesome. Where can people follow you online, or what are your social media?
I don't know, like Trey Cool on Instagram, I guess.
Yeah, hit us with all of it.
That's it.
That's Trey, the one?
Cool, greenday.com. I don't know. We pretty much got our names back. Because people, like, when the internet came out, they're like, oh, I'm Trey Cool. And, you know, stole our domain names and stuff. But, you know, we killed those guys.
Now you've taken the power back.
So now it's ours.
But as you should. Awesome. Also, huge thanks goes out to the brewery for hosting us the entirety of season one of Member Guest.
Woo!
You whoop, like whoop. The beer? You like the beer?
It's really good. I mean, I didn't taste it.
You didn't have any, huh?
No, I had no idea what it tastes like.
Great people here. Great beers. Awesome combination for us. To all of our members and guests out there, hang out with us online at Mark, what is it?
member-guest.com.
And at member-guest-official on Instagram or at member-guest on Twitter.
Brilliant.
Trey, you arrived as a guest, and now today you leave as a member. You're always welcome back. Any final thoughts?
I just want to see Mr. Steele here win a major. Let's go.
That's it?
That's it.
No problem.
That's all we ask you, Bree.
That's all it. That's
only
all
one?
It. Yep.
Okay.
At a time.
Yeah.
And if you do this year, then you have to dedicate it to Trey.
I can do that.
Okay. May your drives fly straight, and may your guitars and your drums stay tuned now and forever. Adios.
Cheers.
Prost.
Prost.
My German friends.
Yo, my Sufowiet.
Which in Bavarian means let's get pissed.